Baby, you are gonna go broke showing turkeys like these.
It's turkey time. Gobble, gobble.
I gotta talk to you.
You won't let go of it, will you?
I saw what I saw.
Psychotics are more active when the moon is full. And this guy's a psycho. When they catch him, you're gonna find out he's just as human as you and me. You have got to get this idea out of your head. There are no such things as werewolves. The Bible tells us to fear the terror of the beast.
I want you to turn this into a silver bullet.
Heck, you're gonna shoot a 44 bullet at anyway. Made out of silver.
How about a werewolf?
The moon is full. You better watch it.
I think he's going to come after me.
Are you ready?
You see how all things serve the will and the mind of God. You see?
Help me, please. He's out there. I saw him.
Hey, listeners, Movie Miss here, welcoming you back to another episode of Let's Talk Turkeys. This is part two of our two-part discussion on Stephen King's Silver Bullet. Our special guests on this episode are two of the three co-hosts. We've got Matt and Dave from the VHS Abyss podcast. They're UK-based. Man, was it a good time having them on this episode. So I'm really happy you came back to hear us wrap up this discussion. There are a lot more laughs ahead. When we last were here, the gang of vigilantes were heading out from the bar to round up some private justice. They were in that chest-high fog. They were getting attacked by the werewolf, and it was not going well for the majority of them that stuck around. So let's jump right back into the action. Here's the rest of Silver Bullet. Reverend Lowe, now in church, we see several coffins laid out in front of him. The congregation is singing Amazing Grace. And then the good reverend begins to speak, and the people start talking back at him, and then they all change into werewolves. Guessing, just guessing, this is where most of their budget went, was this scene.
Yeah. Apparently, there was up to 40 makeup guys that were actually on that whole scene. So yeah, like you say, I think a lot of the budget went on purely that dream sequence. So there was the special effects guy, Italian guy, he was on about it. It says that it started out first, they went in stages. So everyone went into like hair, and then it went on to teeth, and then the ears, and then it was just like a gradual thing. And then it says like, then you just saw like all these extras. So it's to go to that much effort of getting like up to 40 different special effects makeup artists to come in for this one scene. Yeah, like enough respect for that, to be fair. Even though
but ultimately it's a dream sequence that doesn't move the film on any way, and it probably just
a bit lost. Yeah.
Well, that was going to be my question: was, were you a little let down? This question's to all of you, but especially first time watch for Dave. Were you a little let down by the fact that this is where a lot of their budget went? This is a big werewolf blowout scene, and it comes to nothing. It's for no reason. It's just because they can.
Yeah, I literally was deflating because up to this point, we've had no real indication of who that we're sort of being led down some paths on who the identity of the werewolf could be. I think they've been heavily pushing it onto poor old Uncle Red from the start, but they ruin it all by just showing the Reverend waking up from his night terror, and you like think, well, okay.
Dan gives you a little wink where he says, let it end, like, you know, as he jumps out of his, you know, and it's kind of like, well, what does he mean by that? You know, if it's a first time watch, it's like, well, is it a hint, or is it like, you know, does he mean the dreams in general, or do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, that's your first little kind of taster of. So yeah, it was an interesting scene. It just seemed a bit pointless to throw that much budget at it. So
yeah, I agree. This was a letdown, because I thought the whole scene, like we're going on about the special effects, but everything about this scene was actually really creepy and cool. The way they're swaying to the music, the start of the change, that you could see, like even the actors get better, like the anger in their face. All this stuff is like building up, and then it starts to get a little ridiculous when you see like the werewolf piano player like on the keys. That was a little cheesy. That one kind of took me out just a little bit. I was like, all right, you know, like I don't know what the hell is going on over there. This is like werewolf down, John or something.
Yeah,
but this is. But it was a great scene. Like the werewolves even looked amazing. For my first time watching it, I thought, if this is what the main werewolf is going to look like, this is going to be creepy as hell.
Yeah.
So that all leads to this huge letdown for the rest of this film.
So now we get another weird thing with timeline and dates. We cut to a sign where we see Marty's family noticing the fairgrounds are closed and the fireworks are canceled. And Marty's super bummed about it because he lives for fireworks. And the sign says October 1st.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is when I realized that I was way off the mark when I'd suggested this is a 4th of July weekend movie, because I'm so
yeah, good job reading that.
Back at Marty's, the family is now grilling outside. Jane's got a friend over. Uncle Red is in the garage with Marty, putting finishing touches on the new silver bullet wheelchair, which I love. Marty whines that the monster killed his friend and got the fair canceled, and now there won't be fireworks. Wah. He just makes a weird comment, too, about his sister's tits.
Yes.
Where's Mom?
She and Dad are out back lighting a barbecue. Yeah, Jane's walking around in all these new clothes showing off her tits, acting like nobody ever had tits before her.
Was that weird?
Yeah.
Me, personally, I've seen a few horrors around this period, and it's amazing just how like little brothers have like noticed this stuff with their own siblings and stuff. Like, you know, there's a lot of comments and a lot of horror, little kids like being obsessed
little
with
pervents, yeah.
Like their own siblings, you know, private parts, and it's a little bit weird. Like you little notice it, do you know what I mean? It's like what.
I wasn't surprised by this because I've read some Stephen King and you've read some Stephen King too. And there was a short story that he wrote that in a scene, the little brother masturbates with his sister's panties. Stephen King's got some fucking issues.
He's writing scenes like that, but then chucking in insults like Booger and some of the other shit.
You almost like expect him to do like a PSA at some point of just being like, kids, don't do crack. And he's like sniffing and everything.
So Marty takes off on a quick test run of his new silver bullet. It's really fucking fast. And he doesn't wear a helmet.
Yeah, it's gone beyond wheelchair now, right? It's a full-blown motorbike. Yeah, it's like, yeah, he's got no helmet. Yeah, he's got gears. I mean, he's overtaking trucks.
Literally overtakes every other vehicle that's in the town.
Yeah, that's it. He's like literally going to the next town and then turning around and coming back again. It's like, yeah, it works for me. Like, yeah, I mean, it's like, shit the bed. But I love it where like Red, he comes out with that line where he says, yeah, if your mother finds that, then I'll be playing soprano in the Vienna Boys Choir. Yeah, like, he's like, I never understand what you mean, Uncle Red. But yeah, I mean, it's just like, yeah, he's got no response to that whatsoever. Yeah,
you can see their relationship. And I love how sweet it is, because he does take a minute, Uncle Red, and get kind of serious. And he says, now, if you get hurt on this, I made it for you because I love you. And if you get hurt on it, it would kill me. Yeah. They're the relationship, I believe, not the sister and the brother.
Oh, no, it's a great relationship, totally.
So everyone finishes eating now at the barbecue. And this is the scene where I was saying there's a goof that happens and they leave it in. Uncle Red is saying goodbye to everybody and he's excusing himself. And he's reaching over and like shaking everybody's hands and being silly. And he accidentally hits a glass and he knocks it over, but he grabs it right before it's going to spill. And he kind of goes, hey, and everyone's all, hey. It's this funny little goof and they left it in. And I love it because it's just perfect Uncle Red.
Yeah.
So now over at Uncle Red's car, he gives Marty a small bag of fireworks and tells him to keep it a secret. He tells Marty, you're still going to have the 4th of July, but in September. So oh, now we've time traveled. This is now Marty McFly. Because now we're back in September. So he tells Marty, be safe, stay near the house, and save this rocket for last. And then cut to later that night, Marty climbs out his window. He's on the second story, but he manages again. Why did we need to show this? He goes, scales down with his arms down the lattice work on the side of the house to get to his wheelchair, which happens to be parked right at the bottom of his window.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd think his parents would have clocked that by now, that he conveniently leaves his mode of transport outside by that lattice work.
This is where all the training regimes come into place, isn't it? This for this one scene, all that upper body strength, like all that extra training, because he obviously did his own stunts, like, you know, like that's impressive, like the way he comes down there, like with just his arms. Yeah, that impressed
strong.
Me a lot.
Why isn't he fighting off the werewolf? I mean, he's clearly very strong.
Well, if you go back to the beginning, when he first like goes into the house from the carnival, he can't move his wheelchair for shit. Like, he's struggling up that ramp, and he's like pulling wheelies, and you almost feel bad for him. It's like,
no wonder he's got a motorized wheelchair.
Maybe bone idle with these like five gear chipping wheelchairs that his uncle's making him. Like he's never using his like arms like for real things.
So he takes his bullet over to a nearby bridge over some water in this little park area, I guess not too far from his house, and starts setting off his fireworks. We know the werewolf is watching him because we have werewolf vision and Darth Vader breathing. Okay, so the werewolf appears at the bridge and starts making his way toward Marty. And this is where we get really weird, I thought, music that kind of reminded me of Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Or Psycho, like the type of music when the werewolf is like coming toward him. Did anybody else get that? I was like, that's from like Friday the 13th, I think.
Yeah, it does seem a bit strange how he approaches him differently to other like victims, you know, like in slow manner when normally he goes like Tarzan style through windows and
burst through under the bridge or whatever.
Or shakes sheds and but he's just quite calm and collective. I don't know, he probably thinks like, he's in a wheelchair, I've got plenty of time. Yeah. So that whole fireworks scene, the shot it obviously like in 84, but then they had to come back in 85, like the spring. Several months later to redo it.
The continuity issues on the initial shot. So,
are you kidding? Really?
They had to reshoot it several months later, like just that one bridge scene.
And they had to frame it as well because it was changing of the season. So it was really autumnal when they went back. So they had to cut out any views of the leaves on this reshoot.
But as we know from trying to follow along the timeline, who the fuck would have noticed?
Exactly.
Even do a newspaper scene, for God's sake.
The 1980 newspaper.
All right, so the werewolf is creeping up on Marty, as you said. He gets him in the eye with the rocket. And I know he's supposed to be a werewolf, and so he can like withstand more than if he was in his human form, but I call bullshit. If you put a rocket like that in somebody's eye, I don't know. Luckily, he can get away. He speeds away and gets home, but I don't know. It didn't seem like enough to me. It really didn't.
I've got the answer. Because the whole time, like when you're sitting there like wondering about the music and everything, when the werewolf showed up, to me, I was wondering how the hell it was able to stand up, because that thing's head is freaking huge. I mean, like, how is it able to keep its balance without like just falling over at some point? So like, that's why it didn't affect it, because it's got this huge fat head. So it just like went into like a little pocket of fat. Werewolf's like, oh, you know, no big deal. Let's take
like
it out later.
Like a football mascot, like a big head on a little body. So Marty calls Uncle Red in the middle of the night. And of course, Uncle Red doesn't believe him that he saw a werewolf. Then later, Marty tells Jane, his sister, he saw a werewolf. And then we suddenly get more adult Jane narration over this shot, saying that she believed most of what Marty told her in that moment.
But she spent the first majority of this movie telling her that, convincing us that she thinks he's a dick and an annoying. So why she took that pill quite easily, didn't she?
So then we get a montage of young Jane going around town collecting bottles and cans for the church drive. And the narrator is telling us what she's doing. We can't just watch it for ourselves. We have to get the narration that she's searching for somebody with one eye.
Yeah.
Okay, that tracks. And maybe I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my brother's full of shit, but I'm going to go see for myself.
I mean, that guy who's got the hot towel around his face. I mean, she like walks it. It's like, hey, going to... It's like, no, of course I ain't got no fucking cans of bottles. I'm having a shave. And piss off, little shit. Yeah, it's like, just let me chill out. I've had a tough week.
Trying to come up with insults for everybody.
Yeah, totally.
Buggerhead.
So I wonder if he goes home and checks them off like, yeah, that was a good one. All proud of himself. So Jane finally makes it back to the church with all her bottles and cans after not finding anybody with one eye. She doesn't see, but we do, that the Reverend has a bandage, an eye patch or something over one eye. She takes her bottles down to the garage, finds a broken piece of the Peacemaker bat in a pile of cans, and gets startled when Reverend Lowe comes in. In this scene, I don't know if it's for our benefit or if the Reverend is just a moron and doesn't pick up on it, but Jane clearly has panic on her face when he approaches her.
Yeah.
Is that for our benefit or is he an idiot because he doesn't pick up that she's panicked?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, he has got one eye. So the other one might be running a little bit, you know, fever or something. But the best thing about it, she's dumped all this stuff in that garage. And it's blatantly obvious. He's not doing shit about this recycling. There is like months, if not years worth of things in this garage. And you just think, like, why is she even bothering? He obviously don't give two shits about this recycling project thing he's doing. And he comes wandering in and it's like, oh, yeah, I've got to go now. Okay, bye.
But I do have to say this week, as me watching this for the first time, this is genuinely a reveal to me. I'd not suspected it. The church scene with the masked werewolves had the correct effect. That proper threw me off the scent of him being the werewolf. So, yeah, I thought that was cleverly done, the way they were able to mask that and not foreshadow it too much and make it blatantly obvious that he was the bad guy. But, yeah.
This is so fun hearing the first time watch perspective, because it's been decades since I saw it for the first time and I don't remember if I was catching on or not. So, yeah, that's cool that you were able to be genuinely surprised.
Yeah, through that kind of, if you was watching it, there is no inkling whatsoever. I mean, yeah, you could go for the dream thing, but that could mean anything. Do you know what I mean? So, it was a good who's done it up to that point, I thought. I mean, Dave was saying there was like winks towards like even Uncle Red or whatever.
Well, I thought with the pointed out that it's a once a month thing that he goes around to the house, I thought, well, and the fact he's such a bit of a degenerate and probably gets that drunk, they could pass it off as well. He gets drunk, turns into a werewolf, slaughters people, but he just wakes up and thinks he's had a massive bender and he's got hangover.
He's got all ripped clothes and shit. It's like, God, that was a cracking night last night. What did I do? That's the thing. It doesn't make it anybody kind of obvious, I don't think, up to that point. So, yeah, I can see from like a first-time watch that you would have no real inkling up to that point.
So Jane runs off. She tells Marty what happened, and they hatch a plan to send the Reverend ransom-style letters with magazine clipping letters saying, I know who and what you are, and why don't you just kill yourself? That's fine. The police in this town don't care about anything. It's fine.
He's literally going to have no idea who sent that. Seriously, it's like,
I've got another letter.
Who keeps doing this to me? God damn it.
So
you can't rely on sheriffs, because like, they've got no like high-tech, like, you know, CSI, you know, fingerprints.
clearly the Smokey Bear Division detectives.
Yeah, they didn't even bother turning up, did they? Oh,
they're not very good. So Jane goes to mail this letter. We see one shot of it, and she's dropping it outside of a store. And the only reason this scene sticks out to me and I laughed is because she's outside of a store and the sign says sick room needs. And I'm like, sick room needs? Is this like a pharmacy? Like, is this a drugstore? Where is she? What sign? Sick room needs. I was like, oh, okay. Who shops there? I don't know. So it was a bandage before, because now we see the Reverend is sporting his little pirate eye patch. Really cool little black deal he's got going on. And he's reading the note from Marty saying to kill himself. And we get voiceover from Jane, adult Jane, saying that they mailed three letters in a row to him. That doesn't seem very smart or safe.
No.
Because also, aren't you assuming, you're putting a lot of faith in the fact that the Reverend doesn't know what's happening when he's a werewolf. Maybe he knows he attacked Marty and remembers that Marty's the one that got him in the eye.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big assumption to assume he's not going to remember you when he was a wolf.
No, totally. This is the thing. A lot of these werewolf movies, like, you see that, don't you? That, you know, they're literally, they're waking up and they have no idea what's happened that night before, kind of thing. So it's, yeah, it's like I say, it's relying heavily on that assumption. And then obviously you only get like that little dream sequence. I mean, it's only later on where you kind of see just how the Reverend is acting. If you're this werewolf and you've basically walked straight up to him and he's shot this firework into your eye, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah,
you're not going to forget that little shit space, are you?
Yeah, that's what that's going to stick in your mind, isn't it? You know what I mean? Right. It's like, wait till I get you, you bastard. Yeah.
Like he's like, just like you said before, he's jumping to that wild conclusion that he thinks it's a werewolf. What knowledge base? What is he basing that on? And again, what are you basing this on, that you think you know how he operates? Like, how could you possibly know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So
he's a genius. But I want to bring up one thing. Am I the only one who thought when the Reverend's reading the note, that just would have loved for just shits and giggles of, as he pulls down the note, he's wearing eyeglasses. You see the little eye patch, he's got the eyeglasses and just pulls them off.
No, he'd be wearing a monocle now because his other eye doesn't need it.
Yeah, who prescribes the monocle? Yeah.
The guy that works at the sick room needs, apparently.
Now we know why they have a sick room.
So we cut to the kids telling Uncle Red what they've been up to, and his response is amazing. I had to write it down because I've never heard this line in my life until this movie, and I've never heard it since. It had to be ad-libbed, right? Because he just goes, holy jumped up bald-headed Jesus Palomina. I don't know what that means, but it's amazing. So he flips out on them, tells them that he can't believe they've been sending love notes to the local minister, suggesting that he eat a rat poison omelet or gargle on broken glass.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say, like, broken glass line. Yeah, it's great.
And then, of course, the bit, he says, well, I'm too old to be playing Hardy Boys meets Reverend Werewolf. I'd read that. I'd watch that. Yeah.
Oh, totally. Seeing little shits run around being chased by werewolves, yeah, all day.
Holy jumped up bald-headed Jesus Palomina.
Uncle Red.
From him, I'd expect it. Sometimes I think your common sense got paralyzed along with your legs. But from you, Jane, you're Miss Polly Practical.
You don't understand.
I understand that my niece and my nephew are sending little love notes to the local minister suggesting that he gargle with broken glass or eat a rat poison omelet. I'm a little too old to be playing the Hardy Boys meet Reverend Werewolf.
Uncle Red finds it hard to believe that the Reverend took a rocket in the eye and he's not dead. Yeah, he was in his werewolf state, so I guess that's fine. And then we cut to Marty out at a baseball field now, watching kids play baseball. This was so fucking sad. Why was this in my horror movie?
Yeah.
What?
A random piece of melancholy of him watching his peers running around playing sports, and all he's done is be positive and seem, it's adapted to his life in a wheelchair, and in the midst of all this fear that there's a werewolf on loose is taking a moment to just reflect on his life and wish his legs weren't working.
I hate to laugh at that, but it's so funny because the kids are all, hey, you've been watching us. You want to come have pizza with us and hang out? No, oh, yeah. I got to go home. Yeah. Like, why would you do that to yourself?
It's so bad, isn't it? I mean, like you say, it's like they'll be sat around just chatting about all the running they've been doing. Yeah, God, you know.
Games are coming up in season.
Yeah, can't wait till next season. Yeah, you know, I bet start running and getting stamina going. Oh, it's like, God, geez, you know. And it's like, you know, he's just there nodding his head like, yeah, I'll just go on my upper body and just start lifting them fake cans in the garage.
So he's getting ready to leave, and we see Reverend Lowe in his car creeping up. He follows Marty, and he gets awfully close to him on this bridge and tries to ram him and run him off the bridge, forces him into the railing. Of course, the bullet stalls. Marty gets it going, just barely escapes being hit twice. Marty's getting low on gas, so he turns down a dirt road and makes it onto a covered bridge to hide just as the silver bullet dies. This part is the scariest part of the movie to me because it's so tense.
Yeah.
You see him coming. Marty can't get it started. It's dark and spooky. And then he starts walking in and he's talking to Marty. He's going to kill him and all this. I got to know, Dave, what did you think first time watch? Were you thinking Marty was done for?
The tension is really ramping. But then I don't understand why he's suddenly quickly scared off by the appearance of a tractor. It was willing to run him off of a bridge in broad daylight and smash his car into him. Yeah, he won't go and just throttle the little bastard in there, do you know what I mean? By the way, he must have the greatest hearing ever to pick up Marty shouting in that cabin while he sat top that tractor. I've been near a tractor. You can't hear anything when those things are going.
Oh, is that right?
I mean, totally. Even, and that's a really old tractor, so being sat on that, that engine, or it'll drown out everything. There's no way you'd have heard it. And it was a great, the speech he gives him when he's in there as well, saying like, well, you know, I can't kill myself. It's one of the worst sins, blah, blah, blah. But hey, I want to ram you off the bridge. I want to kill you, little ass, little shit. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, because murder is not like, you know, that bad really when it comes to like religion and stuff, you know, but topping myself, yeah, can't really do that.
Well, that's why I don't understand he walks away so easily from the opportunity to kill him. That sort of through, like I say, I was invested in that fear. Like I say, oh yeah, you're for it now, Marty. He's going to get you, and he's able to escape just by matter of fact someone being close by.
My mind immediately went into like smartass mode because I thought it just would have been great if this scene would have just concluded with him going up to Marty and be like, I just want to talk to you about our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, you little shit.
And then he just dives off a bridge before he can get a speech.
So my issue with this is, and I was going to bring it up earlier, but I didn't want to ruin the reveal for now. He explains that he killed that pregnant lady earlier who was taking pills to kill herself because it's suicide. And he can't kill himself because it's a sin for suicide, which is why he killed her. To save her from going to hell, basically. My question is, how the fuck did he know that she was pregnant and that was the moment she was killing herself that night? Yeah. How did he know that?
Wolf hearing. He's got, you know, he's part dog, isn't he? They've got great hearing. He was just wandering around. He was buying an ice cream. And then just out of nowhere, he's just like, la, 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 la. Yeah, I'm pregnant. Oh, it's not my kid, little shit. It's like, God damn it. Yeah, so, yeah.
And I'm going to go home and kill myself. Yeah.
Followed her home with this long dog nose. And
older Jane narrating it. He gave it away.
Yeah, he heard her narration from Guy.
That explains it. I knew there was a reason.
Before we do any of that, so is anyone else? So we got the justification for the woman being killed.
Okay.
But we never got a justification for any of the other people. Did anyone else have any theories as to why he killed anyone, like all the other victims? That if he's doing a religious theme here, what is the reason for everyone else's death?
That's a great point.
That is a great point.
I mean, if you look at it, the characters that went, I mean, the drunken guy, I don't know.
Health and safety.
Health and safety, yeah. Drinking on the job. Oh, that's one. That's a sin. You got the shed guy. He was a scumbag. I don't know. He probably realized that whether he was beating up his daughter or something, or I don't know. He just probably hates wrestling. I don't know. It could have been out like that.
Like, why aren't you watching WWF, you son of a bitch?
So, and obviously the hunting guys, they were just
If you went
yeah,
there,
break
Brady? Why did he kill Brady?
Chronic masturbator.
Again, how would he know that? Jane didn't narrate that. That's a completely different podcast,
I just see him be like, no, Marty, go home. I need some alone time. Get the hell out of here.
guys. So, tractor guy magically hears Marty yelling over the sound of that tractor. I assume, saves him, helps him, gets him home. Reverend takes off. Cut to Marty telling Uncle Red and Jane what had happened. So here's what ha happened. I almost died. Uncle Red finds this easier to swallow without the foaming jaws, the hair, and the teeth, is what he says. So I can only assume the part we don't get to see is the fun part with Marty going, and then he had these big fangs like this, and then he was coming at me. That's what I wanted. But yeah, so Uncle Red says he asked the sheriff about the letters, and the Reverend did not report getting any letters. So he does say, though, that he's convinced by the blue paint scratches on the back of the silver bullet, which Jane confirms is the color of Reverend Lowe's car. So he believes Marty now a bit because of that. He goes to see the sheriff, tells him he believes Reverend Lowe should be checked out. So the sheriff says, yeah, no problem. Goes at night alone to the church. Crack police work in this town, I'm telling you. He lets himself in to the property, to the garage, because Reverend Lowe doesn't seem to be around. The Reverend startles him. He pulls his gun and he tells the Reverend, you need to come with me. I don't understand how this scene plays out the way it does. Maybe y'all can just help me out and give me something stupid and simple to explain it. The Reverend smacks the gun out of the sheriff's hand and rips off his eye patch and then takes a solid 4 minutes to transform into a werewolf. Why is the sheriff still standing there?
Well,
Help me understand this.
at one point it starts turning into Tom Jones. I expected him to be doing a bit of like, no, you sure? I knew you from somewhere. It's not quite the howling, is it? Or it's transformation, she was there for a lot longer than 4 minutes, watching in the howling. So I never
True.
understand why these people stand there in pure terror watching this massive transformation. You'd be out there in any hole, any crevice, because it's the scariest shit you're ever going to witness.
I thought maybe it was just me. I didn't get why he just stands there.
With the sheriff, I understand because I mean the man's not that bright because who the hell goes to someone's house in the dead of night, knocks, waits 5 seconds and decides, oh, they're not going to answer the door. I'm going to go around and break into the garage. It's going to take you at least like a couple minutes to put your pants on, do your hair. You want to look presentable when you open the door. So this guy's not the sharpest, tool in the shed.
So the Reverend knocks the sheriff in the head. He finishes transforming, I guess, beats him to death with the bat. But if that's the case, why did you bother transforming?
Exactly.
These are the questions that need answers, people. I am up at night thinking about these things. The kids meet up with Uncle Red, tell him it's a bad sign that the sheriff's gone. They give Uncle Red their silver necklaces and ask him to make a silver bullet out of them because that's what you need to kill a werewolf. Apparently, they had all their research. They went to the library. We missed that montage because they aren't Googling anything. They are convinced that Reverend Lowe is going to come after them on the next full moon when he's full monster. No bit of Reverend Lowe will be left inside of him. I would like to know how they came to that conclusion, first of all.
It's another bold Marty assumption, isn't it? He's suddenly the werewolf expert, but he says, "What if he's just a bit of a werewolf some nights?" And then, yeah, we've got full werewolf.
Yeah, it's a new one on me that. I've never known it to be where like it's full moon, but it's kind of like, yeah, it's not full moon. Like, so it's only like, you only get up to the point where like you've got the top half that's werewolf, but you've still got your man legs. It's kind of like, what is full werewolf. I mean, I don't understand that one bit. It don't make no sense. So, and then, yeah, like I say, like, make that assumption, like, where it's like, no, it's definitely going to be this night, where it's the full moon. And to be fair, it was all building up a bit like Lost Boys. So I was kind of like, you know, the way it was playing out, you know, we need to get home because, you know, it's going to be coming after me and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it had that kind of vibe to it, I feel like, as a finale.
He makes a lot of assumptions because it's like, which could get people killed. It's not like he's trying to decide if the pot handle is hot. Should I touch it or not? Should I assume it's hot? Has the stove been on? No, he's assuming, is this werewolf going to come after us and kill us? I don't know. It's a dangerous game that he's playing on assumptions.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we are overlooking one major factor in this movie, is that time doesn't exist in this movie. It's not linear exactly. So it's like, you know, they can, maybe they do have Google. Maybe someone, like, you know, jumped into the future. They got their cell phone. Now they're on Google looking up werewolves. So there's stuff that we're missing.
I like that Uncle Red doesn't quite believe them, but goes along with it.
Well, it's that attitude anyway. Isn't it? Just that fuck it.
Yeah, I'm giggles. Like, God bless. God bless Uncle Red.
What's up, VHS heads? I'm Matt. Join me and my two broskies, Chris and Dave, on our movie comparison podcast, The VHS Abyss, putting two movies from the golden age of cinema against each other. Whether it's a teenage soldier head-to-head, like Red Dawn versus Toy Soldiers, or simply picking two from a back catalogue of icons of the VHS era, like Roddy Piper or Jamie Lee Curtis. Whatever link we can find between two films, we've got you covered. With facts, gaffes, and plenty of laughs along the way, join us on all podcast platforms to discover who will be crowned champion of the episode. We are the VHS Abyss. Whether it's a hit or a miss, we love to reminisce.
This episode is brought to you by Truly Unique Jewelry. You're a one-of-a-kind, so it's unique, spelled Younique. With all of the jewelry options mass-produced for each season, you're left wanting more when it comes to pieces that showcase your individual style. Head over to trulyuniquejewelry.com and scroll through handmade one-of-a-kind options for every budget, with pieces starting under a dollar. Beautiful costume jewelry to fit every age and every budget. Custom orders are also available for no additional charge, and they flat rate ship so you can fill your jewelry box with matching pieces for every outfit in your closet for one shipping fee. From earrings to bracelets to necklaces, even rosaries and combination sets. Cost is no longer a barrier to having the looks that you want that scream uniquely you. Go to the Facebook page for Truly Unique Jewelry for updates and discount information when you follow the page. Feel good about supporting a small business while you're updating and expanding your jewelry collection, adding pieces for every occasion. Visit trulyuniquejewelry.com. And remember, it's unique spelled Younique. And now, back to the show.
So he goes to the gun shop, and this scene cracks me up because the lighting in this scene, whoever was doing the lighting for this shot, it is so fucking bright in this shop. You can tell that it takes me out of it a little bit. Also, the guy's acting who's playing the, I don't know, what would you call him? A gunsmith or the guy who makes the ammunition for him? His acting's not the best, but he gives him the silver, says his nephew loves the Lone Ranger. That's why we need a silver bullet. And then over the montage of the bullet being made, we get more narration from adult Jane explaining what's happening, because we can't just watch it unfold. We have to hear it.
There's a lot of scenes where she's narrated stuff that she's not present.
She'd never seen that. It's been primitive.
Yeah, there's like nobody there. Like, so this is why, you know, it must be God that's narrated, and that's it. You know, it's like the religious theme. It's continuing throughout.
It's God. Yes, because that was a beef I was going to say at the end, and I'll say it now. I agree with you. It says later something like, Marty told me what happened, but he didn't tell you every little detail. And also, Marty wasn't in that gun shop with Uncle Red. So how does she know everything that's happening? She couldn't possibly. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. So in this scene now, Jane says that they knew they had to have silver to kill a werewolf. The gunsmith presents Uncle Red with the bullet. And it's so funny because this actor, you can tell he's like very proud of himself that he's made this one bullet. And he must not get a lot of business in this small town, I'm guessing, asking for customized ammunition because he's super excited about it.
Well, definitely not now, because like all the hunters have been massacred in that freaking wood search. So it's definitely down at least 50% with his monthly takings.
You're right.
Yeah.
So he tells Uncle Red that this bullet ought to be pretty accurate in case they're going to actually use it. And I like that Uncle Red is all, oh, what? We're not going to, you know, kill anything with it. What would you fire a silver bullet at? And the guy goes, how about a werewolf? But it's the way he says it. He's all, how about a werewolf? I'm like, what the hell is a werewolf? Is that the teddy bear hybrid version?
Well, it's not a full moon yet. So that's what that one is. It's a werewolf. It's not quite were, it's were.
To me, with the That Hurts My Parts, it's like a rewatchable little bit. I back it up 5 times and watch him go, werewolf.
To be fair, though, I mean, that whole bullet scene, I'm quite impressed by it because I've never seen a bullet be made before. But, I mean, it looked like he was genuinely doing it as well. So it could be the literally just bought, like, got in like a real guy. It's like, yeah, just do a few lines with Gary Busey and just do your thing, you know, with making the bullet. Yeah, I haven't really got much acting, like, kind of, like, you know, experience. Like, don't worry about that. No, Sam, just make the bullet, be all good. Chances are, he was just a regular guy who just don't shop that many bullets. That's why his distribution wasn't great.
That's funny. That never occurred to me either, that they probably got some local bullet maker guy. A couple lines, nobody will know. Nobody's going to see this movie, don't worry.
Yeah, totally.
Nicest piece of work I ever done, I think. It's got a low grain load, so it won't tumble. Ought to be pretty accurate.
Oh, well, shoot, it's just a gag. I mean, what the heck are you going to shoot a 44 bullet at anyway? Made out of silver.
How about a werewolf?
So now we're going to get into the slam bang finish. We get some more narration. Jane's telling us that it's Halloween and they are alone with Uncle Red and they're ready for the werewolf. So we see Marty's parents putting suitcases in a car and leaving. We learn that Uncle Red gave them a trip for two to New York that he claims he won in a sweepstakes, but obviously bullshit. He just did it to get him out of town. The thing that's weird to me, though, Marty's mom is like, don't let any trick-or-treaters in, even if they come. Who does that?
Why do you let them in the house? Why do you invite them in?
I mean,
I was
going to
say,
thing?
Do you guys do that?
No, definitely not. No, you'd be lucky if you even make it to the front door.
Close the curtains, turn the lights off and hide.
Yeah, we don't invite them in the house.
I must be the only one who does it then. I'll just say, hey, come on in. I'll cook you dinner. We'll watch some TV, have a couple of beers. Kid's like, I'm 5 years old. Shut up and get the beer. Come on, don't worry about it.
Strange. It's very strange. But how energetic was it, Marty's mum and dad? Leave it. It's like you literally do nothing all year, and then it's like you can't wait to get the hell out as well on a holiday, and still leave your poor daughter with a drunk to look after your disabled son. Yeah,
fine. We've had a year of massacres, and they're just like, yeah, so bye. Don't let the trick-or-treaters in.
What about that serial killer, mom? What was that? Like, what the hell?
You're so right. She's like, cannot wait to get the fuck out of Dodge. She's like, bye.
And if you get killed, it's your fault, Red.
So they leave and Marty asks Uncle Red, did you really win a trip to New York from Publishers Clearing House? And this was a weird response to me. I wonder if this was ad-libbed. Uncle Red says, no, but the moon is full and your parents are gone. And I did win a subscription to Popular Mechanic.
Oh, it's so random.
Okay, he's so random, exactly. And that's the best take. So I wonder what else he said. Inside later, it's 3 a.m. and the TV has gone to off-air mode. Uncle Red's asleep in a chair, gun in his lap. Marty's asleep in his wheelchair and Jane is asleep on the couch. Outside, we see a full moon. Shadows are moving. We get Darth Vader, wolf vision, music and breathing. Uncle Red wakes up, drops the gun when his cigarette burns down to his hand and it jars him awake. He tells the kids to go to bed and they argue about it. And Marty says, but the wolf could still come. I don't know. I'm with Marty on this one. I wouldn't feel safe till the sun came up, honestly.
Yeah, no, totally.
They argue we see the werewolf is outside because Jane sees him and screams. Of course, Uncle Red doesn't see it, so he's like, ah, bullshit. Suddenly, the wolf's hand pulls cables out of a box outside the house and all the power goes out. So luckily, they had a nice roaring fire going in the fireplace. So we can still see everything that's happening. And Marty says, the werewolf's here. Uncle Red says, oh, it's just a fuse. Now, I've had power outages in my house from fuses, and it doesn't take the entire house out. It takes out like a room or a section, but literally the whole house went dark. And you know the werewolf's probably coming. Like, Uncle Red suddenly got stupid.
Yeah.
In denial.
That's a werewolf. That damn fuse again. And it's like, well, go sort it out then. You know what I mean? It just kind of stands there, just stays in the dark. You know, it's like, well, fix it, do something. You know, it's the response that you wouldn't expect, I suppose.
The werewolf apparently doesn't miss arm day at the gym either, because they hear a noise, and after a tense little pause, he comes busting through the solid side wall of the house. What?
He bust through that fucking wall like he was the Kool-Aid man. That was just like, I mean, I was impressed. Yeah. I was like, oh shit, where's the grape Kool-Aid?
Yeah, I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, best thing about it, there's windows. Like, surely that was a lot easier than like solid oak walls.
Yeah. So the bullet gets knocked from Uncle Red and it goes rolling down the floor and through an air vent, like into the floor. But it makes me laugh because I have these like air grate vents in my house and they lift right off.
Mm.
And so Marty struggles and is sticking his fingers between the grates. You can lift the whole fucking thing off because you have to be able to clean it out. So I called bullshit on that. But Uncle Red gets tossed around like a rag doll by the werewolf. He grabs Jane as she's going for the gun. Uncle Red hits the werewolf, turns its attention back to him, tossing him into a mirror on the wall, and just they're just demolishing this poor living room. All the furniture's trashed.
Well, he did all his own stunts as well, didn't he? And that scene with the mirror, like a shard of it actually fell out and it like cut his arm. So
it's actually stuck in his arm and one of the during the fight scene, you can see it sticking out his forearm.
No way.
Yeah, so he did all his own stunts. And that response, you know, when he burst through the wall, like that was like a genuine response because the wolf suit wasn't ready. So it was kind of like he didn't expect or know when it was going to be coming into the shot. So it was that was a genuine reaction where he was like, oh shit.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So Marty's reaching his fingers through, like I said, trying to get the bullet. Uncle Red gets tossed around some more. Marty finally grabs the bullet, loads it into the gun, and he's sitting on the floor there. He gets a shot off, and he is a dead shot because he gets the werewolf right in his other eye.
Yeah, I'm glad it was Marty as well, and it weren't like his uncle or something. That's what I was kind of thinking at the time. But yeah, it's good that it went that way.
Agreed. It's satisfying, I think, is the word I would use.
Mm-hmm.
So the wolf falls back to the floor. Marty and Jane are sitting together and they watch as he transforms back into Reverend Lowe. The music has some werewolf howls in it. Odd choice, once again, of music in this film.
Yeah, it's not great.
Uncle Red comes too and he sees the last bit of the transformation. And what did y'all think of this, all of your thoughts on this whole transformation? It clearly seems to be like shot and played in reverse. I think it's pretty good, holds up pretty good. But what did you guys think?
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's, again, apart from it not being the most convincing wolf costume, it's I thought it was neat. Just seeing all the little bits and it, like even down to the toes shrinking and everything. Yeah, I thought it was a really good effect.
That's the thing. I think it was like, That was the go-to kind of shot for the transformations, weren't it? If you look at a lot of 80s werewolf films and stuff, a lot of it's kind of like seeing everything go in reverse and then they've got like the practical effect of like the, I don't know what you call it, but it's like a bubbling effect around the face and what have you. So yeah, I thought it was quite cool, to be fair, especially for its period.
I agree. I like the transformation. I thought they did a good job with it. It was better, a hell of a lot better than the last transformation we saw from him. So I kind of wonder like what got shot first. My only thought was kind of like after it was all done, I was thinking like, how are they going to explain this crazy naked priest that busted into the house to attack these little kids? And then I immediately went, oh, no explanation needed.
Crazy naked priest missing both eyes.
To me, Frank, like, you know, the sheriff's dead. So you're literally left with like Deputy Dewey, like, you know, he's just like fumbling about. So he's the law enforcement, right? You know, so yeah, I think you could probably like blag a lot of shit with him and just go around it. Fair. I don't know. It could have been like, yeah, well, we're doing like Bible studies, and he says he was getting hot, and then he just started like just stripping down to his briefs and like, you know, get a bit cooler and stuff. And then yeah, you could just blag a load of shit like to the deputy, and he'd probably just milk it all in, you know. So yeah, who knows?
All right, I'll write it up.
Alrighty. You have yourself a good day.
Oh, we do get one more holy jumped up Jesus Palomino from Uncle Red, because he's in shock at this point. And I do like also that we get what I expect. It's a horror movie trope, the one last scare, because the dead reverend jumps up and screams and then dies. Was anybody shocked by that?
Yeah, that caught me off guard. But like I say, I'm a wincy wuss with stuff like that anyway.
Oh, well, I'm glad it got you at least somewhere.
Yeah. It was a bit weak, though, to be fair.
Where he just died.
Yeah. It weren't fast enough, was it? It was almost like it hadn't done abs day, so it was like kind of struggling. It weren't quite Michael Myers with the instant rise. You know, it was like it was kind of like bumbling up a little bit. It didn't have the same effect for me, to be fair.
So Uncle Red goes over to the kids, and Jane is crying. Marty says, "Don't worry, he's dead. We got him with silver." Jane asks Marty if he's all right, and Marty says, "Yeah, but I don't think I can walk." Oh, Marty.
Oh, killer.
You little jokester. So we all get a chuckle. Well, not we, they. And I rolled my eyes. Marty says he loves Jane, and she says she loves him too, and they hug. Aw. Then we get voiceover of old Jane saying, "I wasn't always able to say that, but I can say it now. I love you, Marty. Good night." And we freeze frame. What do you mean you couldn't say it? You literally just said it. He watched you.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so bizarre. And they freeze frame, fade to black, soft music, non-horror music plays, the end, roll credits. And that is Silver Bullet.
That's it.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
So now that we've torn it apart and laughed at it, again, wildly curious, Dave, your first time watch, when this wrapped up, were you left going, "Man, that was great," or what?
Yeah, but I just more like, yeah, that was a film. And I enjoyed it. I think the pacing of it was done well enough to keep you enthralled. Like I say, I love the fact that it did keep you guessing until it chose to reveal who the werewolf was, but there's just quite too much clashing in what this film really wanted to be. It felt a lot at times just like a TV movie, like with when they did the family Smallsy stuff, like the things like him going in after dark and giving us a couple of dollars for new pantyhose and stuff like that. It was just too Smallsy. And yeah, the horror element wasn't enough to class it as a horror. It felt like a family adventure film more than a scary creature movie for me, but I did enjoy it. I can't deny I was kept enthralled throughout, and apart from things that threw you off within the film itself, I didn't stop watching. I weren't distracted. I didn't pick my phone up. I didn't start scrolling on things. I just kept watching it. So yeah, I enjoyed it.
Do you think, given some time away from it, you would revisit it? Was it
fun
enough?
Yeah, I would now. I think it'd be one that I could quite comfortably sit and rewatch again, just probably reminisce on some of the scenes as well, just because there's some bits that are genuinely funny. Gary Busey is brilliant in it. So, yeah, it would be a rewatch. It's something I'd definitely watch again. And if it was on TV, I'd go on and watch it. I probably wouldn't pick it out of it. If I was struggling for what to watch, I wouldn't just pick it up, but I'd easily watch it if it was on.
Okay, Matt?
Yeah, well, I've seen this a few times now. I watched it a lot when, like I say, I used to record it off TV. It's a fun movie, I think. It's one of them breezy films that you can just like kind of shut your brain off and just slap it on. And watching it again now, like, because like I say, it's probably similar to you. I've not seen it going on for like close to 20 years or something. And seeing that the way it was shot and then realising that when it was filmed, it had a lot of slasher elements, like the way, it had a different vibe to most werewolf films, because like in werewolf kind of films, you see you almost instantly know who the werewolf is, and then it's almost like him, like dealing with like that inner beast and how he's controlling it, and then like the emotion after it and all this kind of stuff. Where this is like a whodunit, like, you know, it's like it's a different style. And the period that it was made in 84, it was like the peak of the slasher genre as well. So it was like it would come into probably the bottom end of peak. But it played out like the werewolf was just like a Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees or whatever. It was stalking out folks and then just hacking them to death in violent ways. And it was, that's the vibe it had for me. And that's what I love about slasher films. It's, you know, you can just pour them on and just sit back and just like, you know, like what are your imaginative ways they're going to come up with like, you know, killing, you know, these poor victims and stuff. And it was great seeing Gary Busey in that kind of role. This is probably the most Disney style family movie he'll ever be in. You know, he's never going to be like that family guy who's got like, you know, white picket fence, or, you know, he's got his whole persona is just like, he's got that edge. So this is about as much as you're going to get from the Busey being like a family guy, if you like.
Will you revisit it? I know you own it.
So I've got it on VHS, but obviously I'm having trouble with my recorder. So I couldn't get hold of it for free, like on any of our streaming channels. So I saw it, picked it up for £4 on DVD, brand new. And I was like, yeah, it's definitely worth £4 for collection. It is definitely one that I will keep revisiting. It's a breezy horror. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Like I say, the pacing of it, it's not over, you know, it's not too long. And
hour 35.
Exactly, yeah. And a key slasher time as well. You know, 90 minutes, you know, just do the job, kill some folk, and then like have a finale. That's basically how it plays out. So, yeah, it's not like any other Stephen King movie. And it doesn't feel like his film. Yeah, it kind of, I quite like that as well. Say he wrote the script as well. It was a whole different style for him. Yeah, really impressed. I really enjoyed it.
I pretty much agree with everything that was said. I thought the same thing about, felt like a TV movie at times and stuff like that. This is the first time I've watched it in like probably 10 or 15 years. It's been a long time. Despite even owning the DVD, I haven't pulled it out to watch it again. So it was a blast to watch it. But the whole whodunit thing and then the little bits of comedy element, I just, like as we were talking, I was kind of popping on Google to look around. It kind of reminds me of, I wonder if there was any inspiration from this movie for that movie that came out in 2021, Werewolves Within, because I can see a little bit of similarities now between the two of them, of like the whodunit and the kind of quirkiness here and there. Just kind of like hit me. Like, I wonder if there's a little inspiration between the two of them.
Now that you say that, I am thinking about it and I can say probably, yeah.
What year did that come out? Sorry.
The
2021. Yeah, I saw that. Was it an Amazon? Where they trapped? Did they like?
It was Amazon or Shudder, and they're like a group of people trapped out in the woods. They're like in a house or a cabin in the woods. All right. At the end of every show, I like to jump into three questions to wrap the show up. So let's do that. Question one to all of you: have you read the source material, Cycle of the Werewolf by Stephen King? And what did you think of it and the adaptation of it? Really quickly, I'll just let you know, it was written in 1983 and takes place in present day. So it was supposed to be 83, 84, mid 80s. The similarities are Tarker's Mills, Reverend Lowe, Brady flying a kite, Marty with the canceled fireworks. So a lot of the bones are there, but the whole construct of the family was created for the movie. I like the book. I like the movie separately. I don't like that they made the changes they made to the book. I would rather have seen an adaptation straight of the book. That's just my opinion. So let's move on. What did you all think? And have you read it? And what did you think of the adaptation of it versus the source material?
I've not read the source material. I'd looked into it and again, saw some of the what they've been omitted from the adaptation for the film and things. But yes, I can't really comment.
The only King stuff I've read is Cujo Pet Sematary. I got halfway through it because that is a hell of a book.
It is.
I'm more of a King movie fan than a King book fan. But yeah, like I've read, obviously, on the research side, saw a few snippets about like what the book is about. And it's obviously a short story and things like that. I'm surprised, actually, it came out in 83 because this was filmed in 84 as well. So
yeah, they bought the rights.
Yeah. Look, I mean, obviously, folks were just loving King, weren't they? Like, after it was like that was around his golden generation as well, coming off some massive hits. So, yeah, you can see why, you know, whatever was around, they were just going to buy the rights to. But, yeah, interesting what you said about what's in the book and then, you know, what was used in the movie as well. So that surprised me. But obviously, I heard mentioned before that the wolf actually speaks in the book itself, where I don't know how that. No, that don't work in any level. I'm glad they kept that out. So, I can't, other than that, I can't really comment on the comparisons, only just snippets I've read. So,
okay.
Just read the book again. I usually read it once a year because I love it. For the longest time, I didn't know it was a short story. And then the only reason I discovered it is because it illustrated by Bernie Wrightson. And I love Bernie Wrightson. He's like one of my favorite comic artists growing up. I mean, he's done some amazing work. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, King and Wrightson together again. I was like, I got to get it. The book is better. Like I said, in some parts, the movie's better. The one thing that I love in the book is the illustrations that Wrightson does for the werewolf are so creepy. And then just rereading it and then going to the movie, it was, again, like even more of that letdown. Fuck am I watching with this ugly looking furry creature? What is this thing? This is not a werewolf.
Ted the teddy bear on steroids.
It really was. This was like Cocaine Bear before Cocaine Bear.
Yeah.
Well, I did like, too, that Cycle of the Werewolf takes place literally in a year. So you chapter one is January, chapter two is February, and so on. And it plays out over the course of a whole year. And each month, one person is killed on the full moon. There's none of that religious explanation about, you know, sins and whatnot. But I don't know. I would like to see a version of that. I think like Netflix or somebody needs to do.
We're doing it as a series, something like that.
Yeah, like a chapter, episodic, yeah, with 12 episodes playing out the book.
The premise about the story was it was supposed to be for a calendar, from what I read. The illustrations were, but Stephen King, obviously, he was just concerned that it couldn't come up with snappy enough paragraphs to fit on a calendar. That's why he wanted to expand it into a short story. Crazy thing that they abandoned that monthly premise in the film. You'd have thought they could have quite easily pulled that off, but they wanted to tie it down into a shorter time frame.
So question two, would you like to see another Silver Bullet type film, like maybe a prequel or a sequel to this?
I'd love to see. Yeah, I think because like King is hot again and they're redoing a lot of his stuff. Yeah, I'd love to see like a Muschietti like remake this, you know, this whole story. I think werewolf films, they don't get a lot of credit, I don't think. I mean, there was the peak period was the 80s, obviously. I mean, since then, there's been a bit of a letdown. You had Underworld, Dog Soldiers was quality, but yeah, werewolf films, you know, they get a bit of a bad cred because they're not quite cool enough for a vampire. Vampires can kind of do anything with them. Werewolves, if you do a shit werewolf, then the film's ruined, isn't it? So I would, yep. Yeah, I'd love to get somebody with a bit of cred, spending some time, and like Dave said, like, great idea to to do like, you know, the like a miniseries like Netflix or something, you know, following like this journey of this small town and all that. And yeah, I think that would play out brilliant. Yeah, I'd love to see something because, you know, everything else is getting remade. So, like, I'm surprised no one's touched it yet. So,
yeah, I think it'd be difficult to come up with something that could either. I can't see anything expanding on what's already happening on this. Maybe a prequel sort of premise, finding out where the Reverend became infected and got became his werewolf alter ego. That there might be something there to work with, but I don't think there was enough bones in the town for you to maybe want to revisit the story afterwards.
I've got a really good prequel idea I would like to pitch to you. Tell me what you think. Jake Busey is the dad, and we follow the story of young Red and Nan and whatever antics happen in their life. Make up a crazy antic, doesn't have to be a werewolf, because there's a line that I skipped over. I think it's when the parents are leaving for New York and they're peacing out. And Uncle Red says, you know, kids, your mom and I were a lot like you when we were growing up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So maybe we have young Red and Nan, and Jake Busey plays the dad because he's at that age now.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we do a piece set in the, I don't know, late 50s, I guess it would be, if you were going with the 76 timeline.
Yeah.
And do something fun with them.
Find out what fucked up Uncle Red, what sent his life in a spiral.
And why Nan is such a controlling bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that. Yeah, totally.
Is that good?
And, okay. And it'd be refreshing as well, being set in like the 50s and stuff. You know, like going back to like the original Wolfman days, you know, like being around that whole period. Because again, like, yeah, there's nothing really that's been done like that. Everything's kind of present, isn't it? Where it'd be nice to see it like a werewolf movie set in like an old 50s generation. Like, yeah, that'd be really cool, to be fair. Yeah, I like that.
I like the idea. I mean, I have two of my own ideas, what I'd like to say.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, like, one would be, because we didn't bring it up before, but the guy who played the deputy, his name's David Hart. I like him because he was on In the Heat of the Night TV series playing Officer Parker, and he was great on that. So let's give him a chance to shine. Let's do, you know, Tarker Mills, PD, with like Deputy, yeah, Deputy, whatever his name is. And like, you know, like, how is he going to solve these crimes with his head just so firmly up his ass?
It just got a promotion as well, though, hasn't he, as well?
Exactly. Now he's Officer Dipshit.
Well, the sheriff got killed. Yeah, he got a promotion by default.
Yeah, so this would be amazing. Like, how is he going to solve the crimes?
Tarker Mills, PD.
I would love to see that, you know. I can almost see the opening too. If we give it that Beverly Hills Blues kind of opening.
No, like a Reno 911.
Oh, Reno 9. The other ideas I'd love to see is like let's see Marty growing up now, you know, with the new like improved Silver Bullet and his biker gang driving around, you know, maybe terrorizing. he's gonna be a biker, man. He's gonna be a hardcore biker. He's already got
Sons of Anarchy. Yeah,
exactly. He's like
Tarker Mills chapter.
He's a little badass. He's killed a werewolf. You know, he's put his sister in his place. He stared at her tits. I mean, this kid's got all kinds of trouble. He's going to be a hard ass.
Yeah.
You're rolling me right into question three, Dave. With that, my last question is, where are they now? So let's start with Marty. You just opened up Marty. Marty is now heading a biker gang. Is that your happened?
He's either in a biker gang or he is getting some psychological help because his family was so fucked up. He's got parents that like are making the sister take care of him, wipe his ass, and it's like obviously creating some kind of weird psychological thing where he's got to stare at her tits now all the time. So like there's some complications with Marty that needs to be addressed at some point.
All right, guys, what do you think? What happens to Marty after this?
Well, I think he's literally like the main guy out of Fury Road Mad Max. So like his sister is one of the chain women that he literally like carries around everywhere. He's got a wheelchair that's made out of like spikes and things. And
so you're saying the apocalypse? The apocalypse happens after 1985?
Yeah, I think he lives in a cave with his sister chained up and using it just for like breeding. To populate the world again. And then he's got like a massive apocalyptic gang that go searching for werewolves and things. Oh, I think that's pretty badass. That's my vision of his life.
Mine's a little bit more hopeful. I think with all that upper body strength training he got, he went to the 1986 Paralympics and won gold for the US of A in the ring competition.
Yeah, you don't need your legs for that.
No, exactly. So he went on for great things.
Oh, that's brilliant. Mine was Marty grows up obsessed with cryptids and starts the first AOL chat forum for unexplained monsters. And so after this, what happened to Jane? Who wants to tell me what they think happened to Janie?
She went got a successful career in audiobooks. That's the only path I can think you can go down.
Okay, you win.
Yeah, that's it.
I just had years of therapy and then probably became a therapist herself and went to the big city to get the hell away from her family.
Okay, I got one. Jane was gunned down in a drive-by shooting at Tucker Mills during a drug cartel with Marty. And so, like, this is why she can narrate the movie now, because she's ascended to a god level and can now peer through time.
She's omniscient. Oh shit. And then lastly, all I cared about is what happened to Uncle Red.
Died in a pool of piss. Easy. That's the easiest one. It's just OD'd or drunk himself to death.
That's what I had. He just dies of liver failure.
Yeah. It's not called Uncle Red anymore. It's just called Uncle Yellow. liver failure.
I love that idea. I actually love that. It's like he's died of alcohol poisoning. He's already on like his 25th marriage. He's got like 48 kids running around out there somewhere.
Definitely. Oh. Yeah, we all never right. got to hear about his cousins. Yeah. There's definitely some knocking about, aren't they? Mini Uncle Reds.
Yeah, and those kids are probably fucked up because like at this point he's drinking so much that like that sperm is like pickled. So it's like they're coming out. They're popping out already drunk. Like, I don't know what the hell is going on with those kids.
Oh my God. Anything else that we didn't discuss that anybody wants to talk about? I think we pretty well covered it.
Pretty much covered the lot, haven't we? Yeah, we went into quite a lot of detail.
All right, so that is going to wrap up our discussion on 1985's Silver Bullet. If anybody out there is interested in checking it out at the time of this recording, it is currently pay streaming on Amazon Prime, Max, and Hulu. I want to thank you for joining us, Drive-In Dave, today to discuss this gem. I hope you had a good time.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. I love just watching you just crack up and just like, I'm always waiting to see like how long it's going to take for you to pass out.
Soon as we hang up. I'm done. And I want to thank you gentlemen from the VHS Abyss, Matt and Dave, for joining us today. Please tell everyone, if they're interested in checking out your show, where they can find you and connect with you.
We're on all socials, the usual Facebook, X, as it's now referred to as well, at VHS Abyss. And then you can listen to our podcast on anywhere you get your streaming service. To be fair, we're on Spotify, Apple,
Google, Amazon, Good Pods, any cool kind of format that you like listening to stuff, like that's where we'll be. So yeah, we'd like love you to come up with some ideas as well, like, because we enter our episodes with having no idea, so we blag it every episode. So yeah, it'd be nice to hear somebody with some suggestions.
All right, and listeners, I had them on the show because I wanted you to get a taste of their personalities and their thoughts and opinions on film. They are an amazingly fun time. Please check out and support their podcast, The VHS Abyss. We want to thank all of you for listening. And until next time, goodbye.
The law has a name for what you people are planning. It's called private justice. And private justice...
You come in here and talk to these men about private justice.
Private justice.
And explain to him about private justice. I'm going to go out and hunt up a little private justice.
Hey listeners, Movie Miss here, saying we know you have a lot of options when it comes to podcasts, so we want to thank you so much for listening to ours. Please make sure to find us on our socials and join us. Be part of our bad movie conversations. We want to chat with you. We're on Facebook with an official page, as well as a Let's Talk Turkeys discussion group, where you can talk with other like-minded individuals who like bad movies. We're on Instagram at Let's Talk Turkeys. Our Twitter handle is at Gobble Podcast. That's GOBBLEPODCAST. And of course, you can always email us direct. We would love to get suggestions from you of movies you would like us to cover. If you want to be a guest on the show, we would love that. So directly, that's Let's Talk Turkeys, all one word, at yahoo.com.
You still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Thank you.